Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
It's got Star Trek, episode 38, Lower Decks, season 1, episode 2, Envoys.
Rutherford, great work on the EPS grid. I wish I had more engineers like you. My life would be a lot simpler.
Thanks. Can we talk for a second?
Just for a second? Don't tease me. Come on, man. You're my number one with the bullet systems guy. I got time for you in spades.
I just wanted to let you know that I'm going to be exploring other opportunities on the ship.
Are you saying what I think you're saying, Ensign?
I'd like to request a transfer out of engineering.
Consider your request granted! Oh, man, this is exciting. I'm sure wherever you end up, they'll be lucky to have you.
Aw, thanks, guys.
I'm going to miss you.
So there was, I guess, some confusion about among the stars which one Billups was. And I think we learn, I don't know if anyone else was confused.
Oh, that's right, because you guys were talking about that the last time.
But it's been, Billups is in fact the bald.
Not bald.
Sorry, you're right. Yes.
He is the haired fellow.
He's the haired fellow with the mustache. And he was on the planet in the first episode leading the away team. And then this one you saw, he was a head of engineering or whatever.
Chief engineer. Lieutenant Commander Billups, I believe.
Andy Billups, yes. And it.
By the way, welcome to the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
Welcome.
Welcome.
And
welcome.
Our ongoing coverage of Lower Decks. This is episode 38 of the It's Got Star Trek podcast. I know. We're plowing right through.
We've been
through
doing
there.
A lot of these.
And
38 weeks.
38.
Don't shoot
weeks.
The food.
And we're talking about Lower Decks.
Wizard,
and
shot the food.
This episode is called Envoys, which was episode 2 of season 1.
So, and then to fill it out, this was a little harder to find out, but not that hard because it's the internet. The guy who was the bald guy with the mustache is Lieutenant Commander Stevens. Now, and they're both lieutenant commanders, but one's of engineering, and I'm guessing that Lieutenant Commander Stevens, the one without the hair and the mustache, I'm guessing he's Lieutenant Commander to... I don't know how these ranks work, but like I guess he works directly under Ransom, whereas the engineer guy is Lieutenant Commander.
Because we saw them together in the first episode.
Yeah, or, so it was a little confusing, I think, which was which.
Well, partly it's because, you know, at least in Star Trek, you have your rank and then you have your title. And they're not, you know, so you can be a chief engineer and be that at a few different ranks.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So, right. And, they didn't actually refer to anyone directly in the first episode. And I didn't even know his name was Lieutenant Commander Stevens until I looked it up. Although now I'm thinking about it, I think they referenced him. Anyways, to finish that up, Andy Billups is played by Paul Scheer and Commander Stevens is Ben Rogers, who is...
Mm.
I don't really know much about.
All right, so anybody else who is confused out there, because we were confused.
Yeah.
From the pilot episode, anyway.
If anyone's confused by us.
And before I forget, I want to mention that I meant to mention last week that they made a reference to the appearance of the warp core last week. I remember once I was saying, like, you know, when Geordi, when we did the TNG episode, it was with Geordi, it was the one where they... went through time a bunch of repeating macro or what was that episode called?
Cause and effect.
Oh.
So the one where they repeated time and Geordi was all like, this warp core is so...
Where Kelsey Grammer keeps coming through a time portal and crashing their ship.
Right, for like a million years. Yeah. And that Geordi goes, "This isn't it beautiful?" or whatever the line he says, referring to the warp core as beautiful. I was like, that's not beautiful. I know what he's saying and I know what they're trying to convey. what I'm seeing is... there's some dissonance between what I'm seeing and what, and that of course just had to do with, I think, you know, just limitations. And so there's no Jones in here. I just thought it was kind of interesting because usually when people say something beautiful, it's this grand sort of with like thing going on. Yeah. And this is just, and they referenced that directly in, the first episode. Cause she was dissing on it too, because,
Boimler, butthole, and buttstown.
It was either Boimler, I think it was Boimler or Rutherford. I think it was Boimler who was saying how beautiful like the warp core was, and Mariner was like, "No, man, she shut him down." And so I thought that was funny because like, yeah, they was poking fun at, you know.
Although in this case, because I agree with you in the case of Geordi, He's saying this is beautiful, and in the context, I believe the understanding is that the audience is supposed to agree.
Yeah, I mean, I get the point.
But in this case, it's different, because in this case, they're making it clear that what Rutherford is into, right? In other words, cleaning out Jeffrey's tubes, you know, realigning EPS manifolds and things like that.
Yeah, he's really into the Jeffrey's.
He is super into that. And we're, as the audience, put in the position of understanding that nobody else thinks that's cool. It's unique to him, or at least maybe not unique to him, but that's what he's into. And I thought that was pretty cool how they really, in a very sweet manner throughout the episode, sort of took him on this arc to explore different options, but ultimately realize, no, what he's really, really into, realigning EPS manifolds.
And he observed someone like crawling out of a Jeffrey's tube, and then like somebody else was like, you'll never have to be in a Jeffrey's tube again. Yeah. He was like,
yeah, maybe not. Yeah, it was funny because he went through all this effort to like do all these things, you know, to try different positions and things and in turn on the Cerritos
with the goal of being able to have time to hang out with Ensign Tendi,
right?
While
and then
watching the Pulsar,
and he gave up at the last second. He couldn't just take a couple. Like, did he really have to go back to work that quickly? You know what I mean? Like, couldn't he hold on a few more minutes to watch the thing with her? But what was funny about that is that, or one of the things that was funny is on the line of what you were saying about all these things he's into that are seeming, you know, to try to put across what he's into. She's all looking at the Pulsar on her tablet or whatever, and he's all looking at like some electronics in the Jeffrey's tube.
Yeah, well,
I
mean,
beautiful.
You know, to jump to the end, this was a great episode of Star Trek, ultimately, because, and we can go through the particular points, but the ending is a good place, interestingly enough, to start, because the story concludes with these two people who are very competent professionals with their own particular passions, and they want to spend time together, and they find a way to each be able to enjoy their nerdy passion. And that's what it is. I mean, they're not playing video games or anything. They're feeling awe as a result of nerdy, cool science stuff. And it's presented in a positive light.
Yeah. And she's definitely, I mean, they skirt around like interest in each other, but she definitely seems like she's interested in him. Cause I could, you know, like watching the she was like, I don't give a shit, right? We'll watch the Pulsar on a tablet, but you know, she would have rather seen it like next to the window or whatever.
Sure.
You know,
but
she made it. She made it seem like it was no thing.
Well, she wanted to spend time with him, which was cool. And the Rutherford character, for me, it's really interesting to me, this character, because he's ostensibly a human. He has this weird biomechanical upgrade thing,
which is interesting because that allows us to sort of learn new things. It's like it's like a wild card character.
It's both a reference to previous Trek in that we've seen similar things throughout Trek, including on Discovery most recently. So the concept exists in the Trek universe, but in that sort of 90s time frame Trek, it's not the main thing we think of. We certainly haven't had an extended period of experience with somebody with that sort of implant. So in that sense, it's a new thing, right, to deal with. And these are new characters. This is only the second episode where we're learning about them. We don't know much about them yet. But with Rutherford, what's really interesting is what can we attribute in his unique personality, which is very unique. Which is unique. It's sufficient to say unique. You don't have to say very unique. You can't be very unique. Unique means singular. Yeah. And you can't be very singular. Anyway.
We know you know that.
I know. I'm just very upset at myself.
You probably know it much better than I do.
So he has this interesting personality, but then how much of that is his core personality and how much of it is attributable to his implant? How much does that matter? Right?
Right.
I think they're going to have a lot of room to explore this character's identity.
Yeah, they referenced that in the first episode with him like being like, that wasn't logical or whatever, kind of like in the middle of a date. He was like, or it was either in the date or talking about the date, he suddenly flipped over to other mode, like Vulcan mode or something. And so he's still trying to get it under control.
And in this episode, he does the same thing when he's doing the simulation with Shrax. Mm-hmm. Right? Or Shax, Lieutenant Shax.
Which, once again, I forgot was a Bajoran until he said...
In the name of the prophets.
In the name of the prophets. I was like, oh, yeah, big earring on his ear. Yeah, like.
But we'll get to the Mariner Boimler stuff in a second, because that's fun, too. But I don't know. I found this Rutherford arc very interesting, partly because he clearly wants to hang out with Tendi, right? And it's done in a very mature but also childish fashion, you know, new love kind of thing or whatever, new friendship even. So he goes on this adventure to try out these different tasks, these different jobs he could have on the ship, in the command, in medical, in security, and was that the three that he did?
Yeah, it was security, medical, and what was the other
one? Like bridge.
And the bridge, the command.
Yeah.
Yeah, the simulation. So the thing is that every single time he, first of all, he approached the chief engineer. And they played it for laughs as if the chief engineer was going to be mad. But no.
Right.
He was, Billups was totally supportive of him.
They were so
right?
supportive.
And then he goes, you know, to Ransom. Ransom was 100% supportive.
Yeah.
Right? 100%. In fact, he keeps failing this simulation in hilarious, bizarre ways.
105%.
Mega failure.
It's like some people outside the ship wanted to. We're
talking about all the ship's children have been injected into space.
So kindergarten on deck 9, and then there's a preschool, and then there's like all the children have been injected.
Like a pre-K.
But pre-K, yeah.
So Ransom, who is portrayed, we know very little about Ransom, but he's portrayed as this hyper-masculine, sort of maybe full of himself kind of guy, yet he has nothing but joy and I don't know if it's hope or whatever. He clearly is into doing whatever he can to help Rutherford try this out.
He's also got sort of like this like childlike, you know, love of the simulations too. He's like, let's make it do something different this time. It's more children.
And you know, the Dr. Tahana, she was maybe the roughest with him, but she still was like, at the beginning, she's like, you're really good at this. You know, like,
try this, try that.
And he got all obsessive about when he said, you know, this is like a robot and this is like a robot. Yeah. And the eyes are like robots. No, cameras, cameras. And he's like, I know I meant cameras.
The security guys are all real like welcoming and shit. And they're like, yeah, like you're one of the bears or something. Like,
yeah. And then when he gave up, he's like, what was it? He was like, Shax. He was like, got to do what you got to do. Got to be
you.
Got to
be
true. Way to go.
He goes, got to be true to yourself. That's what I think it was. It was pretty awesome. The Dr. Cat person, I thought she was a little rough on him though, to say if you have no bedside manner, seems like you could have find something there and not need much of a bedside manner. But
well, it is partly ironic, presumably, because she doesn't seem to have that great of a bedside manner.
Yeah.
So I guess the point
that makes sense.
We were supposed to think, wow, even she thinks his bedside manner is bad.
Yeah,
but overall, people were very supportive of him. He got permission to try out all these things. He got all these opportunities, and it just struck me how Star Trek that style of storytelling was. The whole episode was people doing everything they could to help Rutherford find his identity, find himself. Nobody gave him a hard time about it. Even when he was doing poorly, they tried to help him. So, I mean, that's, you know, for all the, we do know that we're aware of some internet haters of the show. Now we've seen two episodes of the show. You'll see these people on the internet make comments that don't make any sense anymore because they're basing it off of what their assumptions the show was going to be about. And this is a very good example. The whole Rutherford arc was more Star Trek than you'll find in even most TNG episodes in terms of the purity of it, the positiveness of it.
But there are a lot of examples of either main characters or characters that are new to a certain episode of they're searching for themselves and people are helping them. You find it, you know, lots of TNG, lots of all the other series, lots of TOS, you know,
and doing so in a sincere fashion, you know, which is,
yeah,
I think,
right.
You know, because
like they mean it, like they're actually trying to help that Barclay guy. Like,
yeah, that's right.
Like they're really concerned about fucking Barclay.
Yeah. Well, especially when he's got the holodeck full of porn, crew member porn, but,
I like that they approach the idea of, you know, if you freak someone out, they're going to have a higher percentage chance of dying. He's like, yeah, I mean, you have 18%, 18%. Oh shit, now it's 20. I like his bedside manner is so bad, he's killing people.
He's like, you should think of work. He's like, I got burned at work. He's like, those are dilithium burns? How are you
still alive? Right.
Yeah.
She's like, get out of here.
Yeah.
I just, you know, I thought it was really good character work. I was impressed. I really enjoyed the pilot episode. I thought the pilot episode was great, but as with all pilots, there's a lot of exposition and introduction to new characters. And in this case, you're getting used to a new presentation, the animation, the how long the episode is, etc. But already in the second episode, I was like, this is fun. This is pretty cool. And the whole Rutherford arc in particular stood out to me as being kind of a real throwback, a real awesome throwback.
Well, I'm going to point you said about it being sort of pure Star Trek in trying to present some values. It was kind of funny at the end with the Ferengi because like Boimler was being a real racist about it, actually.
He was.
He says, we can't trust a Ferengi. The big ears, the beady eyes, the greedy thing they do with their hands. Yeah. And he does like, human. He does like a Mr. Burns thing. Yeah, and then he goes, Ferengi are the most untrustworthy race in the galaxy. He probably just wants to lure us over so he can mug us. And but it's redeemed by Mariner at the very end, because it's like, and to my credit, last week I had not put two together that what's her name was the mother of what's her name.
Captain Freeman is Mariner's
mother. Yeah, I didn't put that together until the words came out of their mouth, the word daughter. I was like, oh, this one I knew right when that Ferengi was happening. I was like, wait a minute, she's like, partway into it, I was like, wait a minute. She's like, she's pulling some stuff. I like that.
You were like, she obviously knows what a Ferengi
is. Because, and also she called it a Bolian, and Bolians look nothing like Ferengis. Yeah,
that's what I thought.
She was trying to make herself
nobody
look
looks
stupid.
Like a Ferengi.
Yeah, so, and like, Quimp. I like at the end, like, he was all fancy, and you could tell because he had a monocle.
Okay? Yeah.
It's like, in their weird ass freaking like hallway bedroom, which I meant to mention last time too. That shit kind of weirds me out a little bit. That hallway, where would you want to sleep? Would you want to be next to the window, or would there be too much like congregating there? Like, what bed do you think you'd want? You know, I don't know.
Well, it's like, that's like enlisted stuff. An officer should at least get their own like little teeny room. Like,
nah, I think, I mean, you know, there's, I'm just bringing this up because this was a huge debate on Facebook where people were getting very, very, it was a bad.
Oh, trust me. Argument. I don't have any negative opinions about it. I'm just thinking about being in that situation. I'm sure I'd get over it, but it's just kind of thinking about it. It's like, well, that's different.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, part of that, this show is accentuating that we are not dealing with the senior officers with their big, beautiful rooms that
exactly,
go
vroom, vroom, vroom,
vroom.
They got nice windows.
No, but the argument on Facebook was that a number of military folks were saying, like, no, I've been on a submarine. I've been on an aircraft carrier. This is how you sleep.
That's like a submarine.
You know,
yeah,
and
totally.
Like, as your ranks go up, eventually you get a room that's only got one other person in it. Yeah, and then way high up in the top you can get maybe if you're on a big enough ship. And plus they showed that on Star Trek VI, right? Star Trek VI, at the beginning of the movie, somebody on Reddit was talking about, like, they asked a question. They said, people who saw Star Trek VI in the theaters, like, what did you think was going to happen when that like ominous music started playing? And so I wrote this like response, because I saw Star Trek VI in the theaters, and I wrote the response, and I ended up having to, like, I went and watched the beginning of Star Trek VI.
Response.
But it was fortuitous, because I was reminded that right in the beginning, when the Excelsior, when Praxis blows up, spoilers for the beginning of Star Trek VI, I guess, when Praxis blows up and the shockwave hits the Excelsior with Captain Sulu on it, it's very similar to this Lower Decks, these bunks, and when the ship gets hit, everyone falls out of their bunks, and they're like, oh,
that's
So we'll probably see a scene like that eventually on Lower Decks.
Yeah, the point I was just trying to make before was basically, like, it was interesting that Boimler was kind of like, you know, he wasn't too cool about the Ferengi. Although in Star Trek they joke around the Ferengi a lot, but I thought it was cool that at the end, even though it was just a device to show that she cares enough about him to like make him look better, even though she's fucking with him all the time, it's trying to, like, you know, chill him out. Maybe even if she's kind of, if he's a little fucked up about it, but he was just like being a dick. I mean, he was bragging out of insecurity basically. And so
she recognized that insecurity, and we learned about her character that she gives off all this bravado, but it seems that when it comes down to it, she's happy to be humiliated in service of helping her friend's ego.
Cause she doesn't really care about shit like this. And this is her way of proving it. The fact that she, you know, they sort of try to do the subversion thing with, like, oh, they're trying to make us say Ferengi look like, you know, they're all the same and stuff. But at the end, it's like a total reversal. So that I thought that was in a good spirit. But she doesn't give. I mean, I was wondering if sometimes she goes a little. If you wonder if she does feel any insecurity about, you know, being how she's looked at, or if she's just rejected it entirely because she just can't emotionally handle it anymore or something. Because she was talking about, I guess this was just a joke, but they were talking about going on a way mission, and she was like talking about how awesome and beautiful it was in the hangar bay or wherever they were. So I'd say, at what point is it like, is she just kind of like, she's probably just fucking with him, but like, she was probably making a wry joke or something like that. But at the same time, it's like, you know, she really tries to make it a point of saying, oh, I don't care about the bridge. Who cares about the bridge? Just a little bit of her has got to care about the bridge. And I mean, I think that might come out at some point.
The fact that you're asking is a demonstration of the depth of character already presented in the writing over the course of just two episodes, right? Because you're starting to ask these questions, and they drop these little clues along, right? Because I know we're jumping around the story, but everyone watched this presumably.
Yeah, well, we didn't do a spoiler free part. I guess there's really not much.
Oh yeah, we didn't do a spoiler free. Oh, fuck it.
We've never done that before.
Yeah,
we did. Yeah, we did it last week for a bit.
So. Yeah, for a little bit.
Let's not do that.
So when the Klingon steals the shuttle, mm-hmm. Boimler is immediately worried about being court-martialed, right? Mm-hmm. And first point about that is I like that there was this actual concern about, you know, consequences for something like that happening, because very commonly on Star Trek, something terrible happens to a shuttlecraft or something, and people aren't like, oh no, we're going to get in trouble for this. They're just like, oh well, mm-hmm. what are you going to do? The mm-hmm. alien stole the shuttlecraft. But the other point there is he was worried about getting court-martialed, and Mariner says, you know, don't knock it till you've tried it.
Mm-hmm.
And that implies, right, that she, you know, sure, she may have been joking, but I think it doesn't probably imply or hint at the fact that she herself was court-martialed. We know that she had a higher rank before and was demoted at some point, because she referenced that in the pilot. So I'm really curious. They're laying these little clues. You know, how soon are we going to figure out what she was court-martialed / demoted for?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm guessing, from what we've learned about her so far, it's going to turn out to be super noble.
Right.
But perhaps that wasn't the perspective of everyone, or maybe she had to keep some secrets or something. So I don't. It's just very interesting that at this early in the series, we're getting hints at that kind of thing. So I'm kind of curious how quickly they plan to sort of reveal some of that information.
So I noticed that in this one, so the A and B plot... I was thinking that so far the two episodes, the A and B plot's really been, the B plot is on
the Cerritos.
Cerritos. It's a California class ship. Is that right?
Yes.
That's what I found out. Yeah.
It's a California class ship. That's why all the shuttles are named after national parks or something.
Mm.
In Yosemite.
And so then the A story is an away mission. So it's probably going to, you know... I don't know how closely they'll stick to that, but it seems like this show is definitely focusing on a more, it's more exploratory than other
animated show. We can go more places more easily.
You know, right. I was thinking about people who might have an issue with the show, and I'm sure there's a lot of reasons, but I'm wondering how much of it is also made up of the fact that the animation style they took is a more cartoony, it's more exaggerated than mm-hmm. say like King of the Hill, and King of the Hill is still funny, right? It's a great show. It's brilliant. But it's not like, too slapsticky, and if it is,
King of the Hill could be a sitcom,
right? Exactly.
There's nothing in King of the Hill that prevents it from, you know, short of one or two episodes. There's like you could just film that with live people,
right? So I was thinking the fight between Mariner and the Klingon Corin, right? That seemed like a realistic, reasonable thing for a Klingon and another person mm-hmm. To have like a friendly fight and just to fuck with the people. Seems like that could happen in the Star Trek universe, whatever that means. But the fight itself, because it's a cartoon, there's more like crazy, even mm-hmm. though it's not a crazy fight, they're doing more stuff that doesn't seem as realistic. It's based on something that's realistic, but you can tell it's super exaggerated. So I wonder if that just kind of throws people off or something. I don't know.
And totally understandable. It's subjective in the end. You know, some people are going to be into it. Some people aren't. You know, prejudging something, that's more problematic. You know, feel free to prejudge something, but you're not going to win any arguments mm-hmm. because, frankly, you're going to start making arguments that sound silly, like, you know, saying that, you know, Lower Decks is too dark. Mm-hmm. It's like, what?
Wow, is people saying that?
You didn't watch the show, I guess.
Yeah, right.
You know, we're just... talked about all the Rutherford stuff and how positive that was. And of course, this plot was also very positive. But the cool part about the animation is think about this place they went to, right? Where it has all these different sectors and all different architecture. All the different sectors had multiple aliens, right? It wasn't like there were only Klingons and only Andorians. They had majorities in the sectors, but they were mixing it all up. And so everywhere you looked,
they meant like a Ryza sector.
Yeah, the Ryza sector with that huge Horgon statue and that creepy lizard girl.
It was an Anabaj. It was an Anabaj who's saying he likes a Jamaharan.
Jamaharan.
Jamaharan, sorry.
Which is a sex act. It's some sort of sex act that they've described repeatedly. Nobody, I've never heard it described.
Yeah,
they just mention it. Every time they go to Ryza, they mention Jamaharan.
But you imagine it's some intense.
The best part of that scene was when she turned into the lizard lady.
From Jurassic Park.
And she was like, he still wants it. She was like, even though I look like this, he still wants to the Jamaharan.
Here's dirty boy thoughts.
Yeah. Mariner was talking about how they're attracted to the weak-minded, but then she also said right after that she dated one, so I don't know if that was intended to be...
Well, okay,
so... She goes, blood, peace, and blood wine. I don't know.
Yeah, that was cool.
I'm going to go blood, peace, and blood wine. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was thinking about it, you know, her interaction with the Klingon. Boimler, of course, finds it ridiculous and scary and all this other stuff, right? Inappropriate, unprofessional. Yet it's exactly what Dax would have done and did do, right? Mm. And nobody bats an eye when Dax does it. They're like, oh yeah, Dax is just getting in fights with her old Klingon friends, you know, or
crazy
whatever.
Trills live for several hundred years.
Yeah, but I think it's an example. I don't know if they're doing this on purpose, but I have the feeling that Mike McMahon and his team of writers might be putting in scenarios that they know are going to be criticized by people, but he's purposely making them scenarios that map perfectly onto fan favorites. Mm-hmm. To sort of be like, if you're going to complain about this, right, why aren't you complaining about that? Maybe take a look at yourself in the mirror.
Yeah. I mean, it's sort of a classic thing to have like a train wreck sort of fun-loving Klingon guy that's all like a mess.
I felt so bad for him, like, even though you shouldn't feel bad for him, but just at the end when he had to do the peace talks and he like is so hungover after day drinking, it's not even like hit the nighttime.
Yeah.
And they won't give him any ale.
He's
it's like
grabbing that girl's shoe and she's like, really?
Yeah. He just vomited wine. Just give him some booze so he can get through the meeting. He must have felt like shit.
Hair of the dog.
Yeah, seriously. You know?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's just a lot of stuff is packed into these short episodes. They are short, and they feel short.
Yeah.
But there's so much packed in there.
But it really feels like there's all this stuff that's condensed and all the, you know, it's one thing after the other. And it's hard to take notes on that and like all the little jokes and stuff. Because you're just like, oh, there's
gotta
just all
more
this
pausing.
Stuff like, all packed in there.
Yeah. A lot more pausing.
It's like, wait, what did they say? Like,
I like that quimp, the Klingon. He was all shifty like a goblin. And then when he pulls out the knife, he goes, "Give me your profit."
Are you talking about the Ferengi?
Yeah, the Ferengi. I like.
Yeah.
Give me your profit.
Not
even money.
It was like the Ferengi was speaking.
Starfleet.
Sort of, yeah, he was speaking like pidgin English, like Ferengi version.
Yeah.
You know, of some sort of like the stereotype, you know.
Yeah, you could tell his character was putting on an act.
He was doing he was doing the Starfleet stereotype of a Ferengi.
Give me your profit.
Which doesn't surprise me. It's still a strong. I mean, we know a lot about the Ferengi that we learned primarily through Deep Space Nine. So we might have a broader perspective on them, but honestly, most of their interactions up until very recently anyway, in this time period, would have still been kind of, you know, obnoxious, shady, Ferengi-style interactions.
Yeah, I mean, DS9 didn't really try to hide their opinions towards Ferengi. And
they just made them nicer. They made them more interesting than just being greedy, than the stereotype of that this guy did a good job.
But then the classic Odo Quark. Love.
Quark.
Relationship.
Quark.
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 I thought the cold open was cute with the energy being that looked like the one that infected Deanna Troi.
Oh, yeah. It was like they harassed some kind of orgasm wisp or something. Like, that grants wishes. It was weird.
So it was kind of, I forget what the other one was, but so the...
Did that give Troi her
baby.
Her Elliot kid?
Yeah, it was that was from season two, I think episode one, The Child.
Yeah.
It's a weird episode.
It's weird. And the kid's kind of, something about the kid creeps me out, which I guess they were going for.
He's got curly hobbit hair.
Yeah, yeah.
Or something. Yeah.
Oh, that's right.
It's a weird, and he grows into a man.
Yeah. It was all very unsettling, so I guess they did a good job.
I don't usually watch that one.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's off-putting for me, but...
It is off-putting.
But it's like, I still don't... doesn't mean I think it's bad. I'm just kind of like,
Yeah, it evokes a reaction, the child.
Yeah.
But so this creature was, on Lower Decks, was modeled after it. So it looked like it. It kind of floated around the ship like that. But it had the voice of... I'm trying to remember if it was an original series or the animated series. There was some sort of a cloud creature that kind of talked like that and was a little bit more aggressive. But anyway, it sort of combined those concepts.
That seems familiar, yeah.
But I thought it was clever that, you know, Mariner was like, immediately recognizes this and like grabs it. And it makes sense again in this timeline, you know, with the Troi stuff. I mean, humans have had experiences with these things by this point. So now this is not special anymore. They're like, okay, we know what this fucking is, this energy creature. We're just going to grab it and play around with it.
So I could see why somebody might argue that that maybe is the first time Star Trek's really done something like that in terms of, well, they're harassing this thing, you know, this thing unprovoked. I mean, I guess it did.
Or, it wasn't totally unprovoked. It was all like,
I'm going to take over your ship. Or
it was saying some sort of fairly some menacing stuff.
Yeah. So, and then they were just like fucking with it. So, but I mean, I'm just always trying to look out for things that like, what people, because I honestly haven't read a whole lot of message board stuff.
No, me neither.
And I feel like I should, because so far I haven't seen any actual arguments or any examples as to why people don't like it, but I haven't read much. So I'm not saying there aren't there. I'm sure they're all over the place, but I'd like to see some examples. But in the meantime, I've just been imagining, like, what do the people who don't like the show, what could they find problems in this? And
To me, it's not
something that bothered me. I just am trying to wonder if, like, but it was kind of a threatening thing, though.
It's a tricky thing, of course, because again, people are going to have whatever opinions they want. Things are subjective. You can argue about this or that or the other thing, but ultimately, it's a TV show, right? So, you know, be entertained. Don't be entertained. I like that person, Batleth Babe, on Twitter and Instagram, I believe, as well. Mm. She's a prominent Star Trek influencer. Seems like a real level-headed and nice person.
That's a cool name, though.
It is an awesome name. But she was making the point, because, you know, this comes up a lot on Twitter and stuff. You know, people get into arguments or not even direct arguments. Sometimes people are just, they see something and they comment on it. They're getting frustrated. And she made the point. She's like, no one can tell you how to be a Star Trek fan. So be whatever kind of Star Trek fan you want. Mm-hmm. But it does become more of a problem if the type of fan you are requires that you also denigrate others.
Yeah.
And denigrate their fandom and stuff. Especially because this is these are a number of television programs that have provided a great deal of entertainment and insight in some cases, and have been influential, but beyond, it's entertainment, you know? Mm. So if you have to hate on somebody, that's what I don't like seeing.
Yeah. That's so, gatekeeping, destroy, just shut something down and destroy it.
And it seems that there's this, it may be a nuance difference. It doesn't seem that nuanced to me, but there seems to be a difference between somebody sort of criticizing something or not enjoying something and wanting to elucidate why, what the reasons are, and get into a discussion with somebody.
Right, it's not on a mission to discover truth.
Exactly. You know? Whereas other people, it's an all or nothing. It's like, you're with me or you're against me.
Right. They take it past beyond interest and turn it into intolerance and just this sort of like, you believe this, therefore you must be a total fucking idiot.
And one of the things that's unfortunate about it is that process, if you're stuck in that process, it inhibits the opportunity to have your views shift and change. And that can go both ways. There can be something you're really into, whether it's a favorite Star Trek series or episode or something like that, that over time, maybe as you hear more from other people, you start to reconsider, and maybe you're not as into it anymore, and vice versa. Something maybe you didn't respect at one point or thought was terrible or unenjoyable or whatever, maybe you grow to appreciate it a little bit more, even like it, as you age, as you talk to people, as you interact with folks, as you learn more about the Star Trek universe. You know, I mean, obviously this applies to things beyond Star Trek, but you know, if it's not, I hate this term open mind, because like it's been abused at this point. You know, it's almost like
like telling people to keep an open mind.
Yeah, because I mean the
keep an open mind about somebody else's closed-minded.
Yeah, it's not fair to the term. The term open mind should be fine. It's just, I think it's been...
Open mind should be fine.
I think it's been abused.
All the time.
I don't have a replacement term for it.
Well, I make this rhyme.
But like I said, I really like that whole, you know, no one can tell you how to be a Trek fan and how to enjoy Trek. And I think if everyone, you know, holds to that and avoids being assholes to people because they disagree with them,
right?
You know, I think it's okay, you know, not that I suggest in engaging with these folks, but I don't have a problem being an asshole to somebody who's being an asshole. Maybe that's wrong. Maybe that's philosophically inconsistent of me, but from my perspective, it's kind of like, no, there's at least some justification. Maybe it's not the right thing to do, but at least there's some justification there. There's no justification to have, like, I love Deep Space Nine. I know plenty of people who either can't stand Deep Space Nine or just they watched it and they're just like, I don't know. I watched the whole thing. I don't get it. I'm not going to hate on that person because they're not into the show as much as I am. It boggles my mind that somebody would be like, fuck you.
Yeah.
It's the best, you piece of shit.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And I think, I mean, I'm not going to tell anyone how to do
that. It's like, would you do that with any other TV show? Would you be like, why don't you like MacGyver?
Well, they do it with comic books and video games. Yeah. Fucking video games, they do it.
What is different? There's got to be something different about certain fan, you know, Star Wars, comic books.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it seems...
WWE, MMA.
I mean, this seems like... I mean, when people sort of think of stereotypical MDMA. Fans of stuff, they don't think of... Whether it's true or not, I'm not making that kind of judgment. They don't think of jocks and people who are part of like a mainstream culture, even though their culture has become mainstream. And then I guess that's one of the things is like they're afraid it'll become too mainstream and then they'll have joined the mainstream culture that they've been sort of rebelling against all this time, or they'll become the same person who used to beat them up as a kid. These are very stereotypical sort of assertions about images associated with, you know, Star Trek fans versus UFC fans versus this and that. And there really shouldn't be, but, you know, it sort of feeds into itself, too, like an echo chamber. And it's just like anything. The more things sort of become polarized and the more people feel like they have to believe in all one thousands of the rules. And if you only believe in 999 of the rules and you don't believe in that one, well, you're on the other side. What? And then the other side's, well, you're on the other side. And then you're just like, man... You guys,
it could be, you know, I don't know. Maybe it could be a mathematical irony brought about by the cornucopia of Star Trek options we have now, because it used to be TOS. And then there was TOS and kind of TAS, if you were aware of it. Then there was the TNG people versus the TOS people. A lot of the TOS people at first said TNG was just shit. And then a lot of TNG people were like, fuck TOS. It's old. But now we're on our ninth Star Trek series. And it could be that there's almost a mathematical imperative to result in the balkanization as people sort of shift into their corners and they're like, I'm a 90s Trek person.
Yeah.
Or, you know?
And see, that's the other thing is, you know, what probably plays a big role into it is, I guess you could call it nostalgia, but just the idea that you were into something at a certain age. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, I'm an adult now. I'm in my 30s or 40s or whatever. And it's like, man, when I was 18, nothing fucking mattered and it was amazing. And that's when I watched Star Trek The Next Generation, you know? So it's easy to like, and it's like, you know, look at your life where it is now, and that the status of your life is irrelevant. But the point is, if you're wishing that you were back when you were 18,
the status of your life is irrelevant.
Yeah. Fuck you. I didn't mean it like that, but it sure did come out
not not your life, kind listener. Yeah, right. Not your life specifically.
But yeah, just wishing things, sort of being rejecting what's now and wanting to be back then. And it's like, you know, things had much more of an impact on mostly with people at that age because they're more, you know, impressionable and they're less sort of crystallized or whatever word you want to use in their own way. And so, yeah. And so it's like they see this thing for the first time. And they're like, oh, my God. And then they see it and they see similarities. And eventually they're just like, well, this is just a bastardization. They're just taking similarities of the stuff. And it's like, it's hard to separate the fact that maybe you are not as surprised by those things anymore, but like they're just as surprising to somebody else who's never seen it.
And you're not the only person. And by the way, there are people out there who make the same sort of cognitive error on the other side of it. You know, so there's the classic, quote unquote, classic people. And then there's the new Trek people who hate everything that came before. I mean, there are people who are just like, no, TNG was shit. Deep Space Nine, you know, anything before Discovery was shit. And again, there's nothing wrong with that opinion. There is an issue if that's your argument. If your argument is, no, I'm declaring that, I'm stating that as fact, so you all are some sort of degenerate morons for enjoying something that is clearly inferior to the thing that I personally enjoy.
Yeah, it can be due to like just, I don't like to say lazy because, you know, then, I mean, we're all lazy from time to time, but it's also difficult, you know, when things are so ingrained and you have such...
It's intellectually a reaction that, lazy.
Yeah, it is.
In the sense that you're not, the people are not taking... One of the lessons, presumably, of Star Trek is to self-examine, look beyond yourself, you know, infinite diversity and infinite combinations, you know, and all that. And it's you know, I hesitate to use the real world example, but obviously there are examples of some people who follow certain religions or philosophies, but do not actually do the things that the religion or philosophy suggests. Right. Yet they claim to be the strongest adherents. Stronger than anybody else, even though there are other people who do in fact follow the tenets of those philosophies,
and they might not make as big a deal about, like, you know.
And ultimately, I guess it comes down to I understand if you have trepidation about a new Star Trek show coming out. They're not all going to be what you're into. There's no guarantee that they're going to be well-produced or well-acted or well-written or consistent or anything. Obviously, this is not a – there's no golden road that leads that way. So the trepidation –
But there is a golden shower before that golden road.
Yeah. I mean, that's optional.
It washes that road.
It's provided as a service.
That's why this road is golden, because
of the shower.
Because of the shower beforehand.
It was showered in gold.
But I guess it comes down to having watched these two episodes of Lower Decks and recognizing, like you mentioned, Dan, you know, recognizing areas where people might be like, you know what, this is not for me, or I'm really not into this. I do find it difficult to understand how somebody could watch these shows and get angry.
Yeah.
Now, you have every right to get angry. All I'm saying is it's a bit perplexing to me.
It's always surprising how angry these people are getting.
Yeah.
I've ever gotten angry at one thing in Star Trek, Star Trek Nemesis. So I understand the concept of being angry at something.
Sure.
And by the way, I know plenty of people whom I respect, who are fans of Nemesis, and I don't hate them as a result. I don't. Because my picture of this person is not composed merely of a measure of how highly or lowly they rate Star Trek Nemesis. We'll review that movie at some point have an interesting discussion.
He's got all my values. You know, we care about the same things. But man, he likes Nemesis.
Fuck that guy.
Fuck that guy.
Something brain damaged.
Gonna block him and move on to the next person I can block.
I don't know. It's perplexing, but. So anyway, like that ball of light thing that got this whole conversation started.
Right. For some reason around there, I have in my notes written Vice Admiral Gibson, and I don't remember who that
because
is.
They were watching a video of him.
That was after the
that was after the was
he title. He fell down or something.
Yeah, some kind of speech he was giving, and he falls off the podium or something like that.
The other thing I liked in the beginning was a small thing, but you know, Captain Freeman's walking along, and that little light creature goes into her. You know, she's talking about, you know, what her catchphrase should be when they go to warp.
Right.
And what I liked about that was I've often thought about how hard it must be to try to come up with catchphrases for the captains, right? Because, you know, Picard has engage.
You're right, yeah.
As well as make it so, but engage is his main thing. I think Janeway would say do it a lot.
Do it. Do it.
I recall Lorca would say go a lot. Mm. Like, he'd be all like, go.
Yeah, but they always have to have, like, a way of telling you to do some awesome shit.
Modern Pike says hit it.
Lorca.
Modern Sexy Pike says hit it. Mm, whereas classic Sexy Pike also said engage in the cage. So Picard didn't
engage
even come
in the
up
cage.
With that.
Let's engage in the cage, baby.
Kirk didn't really, I don't think he had a catchphrase.
He didn't need
for
one.
For warp.
He just had
he would just say, like, Mr. Sulu, warp factor... Too.
He just had a catch speech.
Yeah.
So
catch cadence.
You know, I kept thinking that Rutherford, and I knew it wasn't played by this person, but I kept thinking that's fucking Ryan Ridley. And not Ryan
it's
Ridley.
Eugene Cordero.
I think there was another character but voiced by Ryan
there
Ridley.
Is
an extra. Yeah.
Exactly. I because there was another voice later. I was like, wait, that sounds like Ryan Ridley too.
It was one of the other like.
Yeah, but I thought it was like both of them, and I knew it wasn't. But like
he has such a distinctive voice.
Yeah, he does. Yeah.
And I love how on Rick and Morty they use Ryan Ridley for like 20 voices in an episode.
And they're all like, hey guys, hey. Well, what are you gonna
that's
do?
Definitely Ryan Ridley.
What are you gonna do? I think when Rutherford gets a little excited, he sounds a little high pitched and nasally, like Ryan Ridley, sort of, kind of.
Well, sort of going back to my earlier question, do you think Rutherford, he digs engineering? How much of that do you think is just Rutherford, and how much of that is his implant?
It seems like the engineering thing is just he's. It seems like. The impression I got that's just him.
I think so too.
Yeah,
because it's a new implant.
He
talked about that.
The new implant stuff. Like whenever he does new implant stuff, like we said before, it's always kind of a surprise. Like when he beat up all those hollow Borgs, and
he seemed all delighted.
Yeah, and then when he was doing some other shit that he didn't realize.
Smorgasbord.
And it's a Vulcan implant. Whoever heard of a Vulcan engineer? I mean, come on.
Well,
they gotta have wild. Good. They had Warp 7 before we had Warp 5. I'm saying that because I'm a human. This is a human-centric podcast. Right. I apologize. I'm not going to apologize for that.
Well, maybe next time we can get a Telluride or something.
I'd be totally down to party with a Telluride.
With how at home he seems in the Jeffrey tubes and stuff like that, I think that's him before the...
I get that impression, too.
Before the implant.
But I do, again...
Because it's not manic. It's just, it is obsessive, but it's not weird and uncontrollable.
It seems very natural, but I there's going to be so much interesting to explore with that character. Now, I heard a rumor that they said they're going to have their kind of riff on... you know, Measure of a Man, you know, that episode of TNG where Data, there's basically a court case to determine whether or not Data is the property of Starfleet or a conscious being.
Yeah.
And it's fucked up. And so they, the, I was reading an interview with.
That's with that Bruce guy, right?
Yeah. Bruce Maddox.
Bruce Maddox.
Maddox! And,
making cookies.
So, you know, the, I was reading an interview with the show producers and they mentioned that they might do that. And my guess is it's probably might be related to him. I don't know.
They might do what now?
They said they're going to do a Measure of a Man riff. Like they're going to do an episode that's kind of like a riff on that. So the key thing there is court case, is somebody a human or not? Mm-hmm. And one would think this would already be resolved at this point, but I don't know. He's a prime candidate for that. Could be that they're going to go in a different direction, but they did mention that.
No, I don't want to be reductive, but there is like I'm guessing a lot of people think this too. TOS, there's Spock, kind of like the one that makes you think. TNG, it's Data. Data is like the new Spock, not just because there's a motion thing going on, but just because it's a different sort of viewpoint that we have
outsider,
to understand.
The outsider viewpoint.
Right, and then there's Odo and DS9.
DS9 kind of has a few outsider.
Yeah.
But same concept.
But Odo is the one with the biggest, well, they all have missions, but personal discovery is his thing. Spock didn't have any personal discovery missions. Anyway, whatever.
Voyager has a few sort of outsidery.
I mean, there's Seven of Nine, but that's later.
Seven of Nine fulfills it better than Neelix. I think Neelix may have been positioned as that with Kes, but maybe it didn't quite work out the way they wanted.
So would Rutherford be the closest thing you might have to, or did they, or was it just not applied?
I think they're combining it. I think both Tendi and Rutherford, I think they're kind of doing a DS9 thing where they have sort of multiple people who are looking at things from a non-standard, from a, you know, year 2020 human perspective, you know, the outside perspective to that. So they can comment, you know, they can comment and highlight sort of human behaviors, because again, as some people forget, Star Trek is a show by humans for humans, ultimately. And when you see an alien, particularly in the older series, the aliens were somewhat monolithic precisely because they were meant to be mirrors of certain aspects of humanity, whether it's the violence or the sneakiness or the greediness, you know, and then you could create stories that would inform humanity, you know, moral human tales, by having these types of characters. As Star Trek has gone on and advanced, we've learned more, and these characters have become more nuanced, so that maybe works a little less. So that might be one reason why it works better to have sort of multiple people. T'Ana is another one. She's very non-human. So although right up till now, her characterization has basically been crotchety doctor, so she hasn't provided too much different perspective yet. So I think that might be Rutherford and Tendi would be the ones fulfilling those roles.
I guess I wonder if there'll ever be like a one of the bridge crew episodes, like one maybe about just one in particular or something like that, there's like a this person episode or that person. Do you think they'll ever do that with that, or do you think they'll keep it isolated? I imagine
maybe down the line.
Yeah, I was thinking maybe down the line when they're trying to sort of branch out, but they don't have to do that right now, I don't think.
It might be like for other seasons if they get other seasons.
Man, she spilled so much of that broth on that console. I was like, that was kind of upsetting.
And stuff?
Yeah, there was so much broth.
He was like, you're getting broth all over the console.
It was making me nervous.
It's like she didn't even care.
She didn't give a shit.
But again, that's pointing out, that's what those consoles always look like. They're so flat and shiny. You're right. Like, yeah, you could just totally pour whatever. Those are, you know.
It's probably sealed up pretty nice.
Yeah, they're just doing what again, you know, somebody commented about in the premiere episode, you know, the malfunctioning replicator, you know, kept saying banana hot. It's like that. Yeah, exactly. That's what people
only
think.
When you
what
get
happens?
Food in them.
what happens when a replicator goes bad? What happens? You know, these are interesting problems to them. They're workaday, everyday problems. To us, they're interesting because they're goofy sci-fi problems.
I bet you they don't have exclusive touch screens in the future. I bet to get around that like dynamic button thing, they probably just have. Well, they don't know how to make buttons out of material that can kind of change sizes or something, because it's just like too
computer.
Much to like. Hello, computer. I mean, if you can talk at it, but like sometimes as a pilot, you gotta like go beep 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 beep.
They did this. There's a real world example. I forget what military. I forget what it was. Whether it was planes or ships. I think it may have been a ship. I can't remember. But regardless, they invented this Star Trek style touch screens where the buttons could all like just the buttons would change depending on what configuration you needed.
Man, it's confusing.
And it caused so many problems, and nobody can learn it. And so they just went back to having normal buttons.
There's a lesson in UX.
Yeah, right, well, the other one
people
is...
People expect, their muscle memory, they expect things to be the same without having to, like, think, yeah, like, wait a minute, what is my context here?
I think this was for a submarine. I could be wrong.
They would do that.
They but need, there like, was a big flag, like a red flag, you're in this mode, and green flag, like, just a physical thing.
What they did was, I believe it was a submarine, they were trying to train people on the controls, and they figured out that if they just put an Xbox controller, wired an Xbox controller in, then people could come on and require almost no training. And they're just like fucking
that's cruising awesome. This thing.
Yeah, and that's, it's like, yeah, do that. That makes sense. I don't know. It's with Star Trek, it's always been interesting because they envision a future, and then the franchise has been around long enough that then the future starts to happen, and some of it becomes true, and some of it is like so totally wrong, like in Deep Space Nine when they went to 2024 and computers were built into desks.
Yeah.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
That was the evolution of the 1995
right.
It
was like going to be like mainframes. Everything was going to be boom. Moved away from singular sort of powerful machines and more of a network of things all over the place.
Which is half true. It's just that we do it on phone. Nobody predicted a smartphone, right? Star Trek had pads. Yeah. They had something that looked like an iPad, but...
They always
had like a bunch of them. You have to have like a pile of them for some reason.
Yeah, right. You always had to, that is true, of different sizes that had different functionality. Yeah. They would often get also like the future stuff often gets the timeline wrong, but I mean, who cares? But you know, but
yeah,
I'm thinking about some things they do. I imagine like Elon Musk is going to sort of feed off of sci-fi, and then people will feed off of Elon Musk, and it'll
just go
like
a cycle. Yeah. Humans imagine things.
They mention Elon Musk in Discovery.
Yes. Mm. Yeah. And a lot of people, since that hasn't aged so well.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think a high school or something is named. I went to Elon Musk High School or something like that.
Damn. We're old.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, Elon Musk, you know, whatever you may think of him, at least so far, he's better than going to a high school named after a Confederate general who was famous for abusing his own troops and slaves and stuff like that.
Yeah. And it's just like, it was just like no big thing back then.
That's what they did. That's what everybody did. It was perfectly acceptable.
I learned a word, a Klingon word. I forget how to pronounce it. It's like ngech, ngech, or ngesh, or something.
Oh, like soft ngesh.
Yeah, she said his ngech was ngech, 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 was getting soft. It means. The first definition, and I didn't even bother clicking on the link. I looked at the summary, and it said it means cleavage.
Mm.
In Klingon, so she was doubly taunting him.
She said he had bitch tits.
That's the colloquial term. Yeah.
Anyone has seen Fight Club? That's where we're referencing.
All right. Before we wrap things up, I think a few key points. One big important point. Again, getting back to this whole what is Star Trek thing. All of these people that we see are competent. They're highly competent. They are what you would expect for a Starfleet officer. Boimler, Mariner, Rutherford, Tendi, T'Ana, Ransom,
Blue Cheese
Shax.
When you say Rutherford.
They are...
like Roquefort or whatever, but...
They are all...
It's making me hungry.
Competent people, right? This is not... Some people were afraid...
It's
that
not easy to get into Starfleet.
Well, exactly. And I think there were people who were concerned, and perhaps justifiably, they hear comedic Star Trek.
I couldn't get into Starfleet.
And the show was marketed also, I could see people perceiving that this is a ridiculous ship full of, you know, morons tumbling through the galaxy. That's clearly not the case. These people are not perfect, but they are all... what we've seen so far, very competent in different ways in different areas.
It's not Red Dwarf.
And the thing that, again, they haven't gotten too far into, but they seem to be building towards, is sort of demonstrating in multiple different storylines through these first two episodes, the importance of bringing different areas of expertise together in order to solve the issue. That happened in the pilot, and that definitely happened here in both the A and B story, where the solution to the problem... what required sort of, you know, inventiveness and compromise on the sides of everybody involved, right? So in terms of Tendi and Rutherford, you know, Tendi, they want to hang out together. Rutherford's trying to get all these different jobs, which is sort of the jokey way of doing it, which is, I need time free tonight, so I need to change my career.
Yeah, right.
And Tendi at the end realizes, okay, you know,
it's like finding a babysitter and
it's like, you weren't just doing that to hang out with me.
Yeah, I know, right? But she's just like, I can watch it on here and I can spend time with him and he can be with the thing he wants, you know?
Right.
And it, even though
I wonder if she's going to have some really weird moments to sort of role reverse. Cause
yeah,
it's like, he's kind of obsessive and crazy and she like accepts him, but she's probably like, you know,
she's fucking green and weird.
They made her an Orion
people.
They made her an Orion.
She's not weird from her planet
for a purpose. Good point, Dan. They made her an Orion on purpose, which suggests that at some point the nature of Orions, both the largely criminal nature from what we understand of Orions in general, like with the Orion Syndicate and all that, and then the over-sexualized nature of Orion women, right? At some point, we would expect that might come into play, and it could be in terms of how does she approach problems? How does she develop solutions when she's in a tight squeeze or something? I don't know which direction they'll go with it, but presumably, you know, that perspective will they'll play around with that perspective in some fashion or another.
Two last things I wanted to bring up. I liked the line where where Boimler was all, he had his pants around his ankles and he was all bummed out. Another sort of like him almost being naked thing. Yeah. Sort of like.
Like I said, I think every episode they're going to get him naked somehow.
Yeah. So, and when he goes, I should just turn in my uniform and go work on a research asteroid. She's like, no, don't even joke about that. That's the lamest thing you could do. I was like, what the fuck? Is this on research asteroids?
I like when he said that they'd, I forget the exact quote, but it was like, you know, they'll see my final shaky video logs.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That was great.
Yeah, that was really funny.
Because how many times in Star Trek does the Enterprise come across, you know, just, you know, oh, wait, what happened to these people? We'll have to piece it together by, like, looking through all their shit.
Many movies, like,
where, just other sci-fi movies.
Event Horizon. And, yeah.
But, I mean, definitely tons of TNG did that. TNG did the fuck out of that.
I totally laughed out loud when.
You LOL'd.
Looking up, and also the other thing I want to mention, looking up lore is a little bit different. I mean, it's still brand new, so they haven't gotten around to it yet, but still, it's getting there. But, like, for example, I looked up, and this may be I just spelled it wrong, but the planet they were on was, like, Tolgana or Tolganon or something like that. I think that was the planet there, because they were talking about the Tolganon Neutrality Pact.
Yeah,
and goddamn right.
Something like that.
And so I was looking for that up on the internet. I could have just spelled it wrong, but I'm pretty sure I put on captioning and spelled it right, and I didn't see anything for that.
Captioning's not always right either.
Yeah,
it's like you said, it's new.
Yeah,
some of the stuff is tricky.
They got Jahammer on.
Yeah, well, so I was wondering if it was a reference to a past thing, or if that'll eventually make its way.
Well,
there's taxors. Taxors have money. Yeah, they like taxes. I don't know. That's probably not. But
yeah, I hadn't thought of that, and that's probably exactly what it is. The Vendarian shapeshifter. Was another one that was from TAS, from The Survivor. And they, briefly, he looked like it. He has, like, these tentacle arms and stuff like that.
Oh,
he was
right.
The Andorian guy.
That's
who kept
right.
saying, like, my bones.
My bones.
The Andorian bar was pretty tight.
Yeah.
I thought.
I like that she could just buy him a round of drinks and they would forget about this, like, monster that presumably they've been trying to, like, catch for a long
that's
time.
That's the most Andorians anybody's ever seen in Star Trek altogether.
Probably, yeah. It was pretty tight.
You see them one at a time, usually.
Yeah, I mean, we talk about Enterprise had Andorians, but really, how much do we still know about Andorians? Yeah. Not that much.
Yeah, and because a lot of the Enterprise Andorian stuff was in seasons 3 and 4. Mm.
And maybe there's a TOS with an Andorian?
Yeah, they have Andorians on TOS a couple times, but learn much. And then there's some shady stuff that goes on with that, but and they're dropping facts like that Andorians were one of the founding members of the Federation,
yeah,
as were Tellarites. So we knew that, of course, but you know,
I knew that like 20 years ago.
Yeah, for reals.
I knew that before I even knew that.
Human. He did the thing with his fingers and everything. I mean, that was another. I did laugh out loud.
It was pretty
when
funny.
Especially when he was in the bar, because, you know, he already mentioned the fingers when they first encountered the Ferengi. But then at the bar, when he said it, that's when I really laughed out loud, because, you know, it does remind you of the original Ferengi.
Yeah.
On
wait,
the,
when
the
did
last
they,
outpost in TNG.
When did they see a Ferengi at the bar?
No, when he was recounting the tale at the bar, the Cerritos bar.
Oh, yeah. Okay,
and then he mentioned again, he was like, he was doing the thing with his fingers.
Right. Yeah, it was really funny. I liked it. Yeah, I thought it was, what is it? Give me all your profits.
And then,
so funny.
What do you think the Janeway protocol is? I thought that was funny.
Oh, I looked that up and I couldn't tell if, just because I don't know enough about Voyager, if there's any mention of that, but it has to do with getting out of a
Oh, a time loop type thing?
Yeah.
Some way of like...
Some sort of a temporal anomaly.
Yeah, so it's not an exact like a maneuver that you like turn left and then turn right. It's more like you figure out how you go back in time
or
change time and you do it.
Because I thought it might be from, you know...
Temporal rift.
The year of hell when she smashes into, but she smashes into the time ship and then they're talking about, you know, should we move from the asteroid? So I was wondering if the Janeway maneuver was just to smash into it because she smashes into.
You know, you're probably right. No? I didn't think about that.
I don't know.
Because that was like a time thing. I think it was, it's probably that. It was probably that. That's funny. But because he was just like,
what's that? And the other guy's like, it's a good one.
Like the first one, he's like, don't do anything, get all fucked up. And he's like, do the Janeway
maintain
maneuver.
Course.
Pajak, I also have that written down. That was the name of someone else, and I looked that up and I couldn't find it either. I don't remember.
Oh,
why
that
I wrote
was
it
in
down.
The beginning, and she was like, "Oh yeah, that one guy, of the other that guy can do anything."
It's probably. She said she. Tendi said he was a real snack.
What a
snack! Yeah, okay.
Is it a Vulcan name? It sounds to me like it could be.
And
a
it was
Vulcan
somebody
name.
Named Castro. Like oh, he's like, Castro. She was on the Enterprise for a minute.
Yeah, yeah.
It's an apostrophe name. I think it's an apostrophe name.
Vulcans have a lot of apostrophe names.
Yeah.
And for some reason, Korin has...
Probably them Romulans do, too.
Korin has an apostrophe for some reason.
He's a Vulcan. Because
he's got a Klingon name.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, right, Klingon,
yes. Yeah, they make that point in this episode.
Yeah, I know. Right. And it's just
like,
funny...
It's like,
Kronos.
Why have I heard that name before?
And it's funny because it's just a normal, like, it's Korin, you know? But there's an apostrophe in there. It's not like Gadoop Blop or whatever.
Right.
Gadoop Blop, that's a Klingon.
Yeah, it is. That is an official Klingon.
T'Kuvma. It's not T'Kuvma.
T'Kuvma.
Turitu.
Umantu.
I was watching the episode the other day, and I was like, this is the part of the Dan sings.
And you can get a t-shirt with Dan saying that.
Yeah.
For the, I don't know, how much did we charge for those? Like $50?
Maybe 70.
$70. Yeah. All right, you send us $70.
We might send you a t-shirt.
Email us and we'll send you a t-shirt. We sent out the t-shirts for the t-shirt contest winners, and I believe most, if not all of them, confirmed that they had received their t-shirts and appreciated
Everybody's them. A winner.
See, the trick
so
with
we appreciate you and enjoy your t-shirts.
The trick with this game of sending you t-shirts is we might send you a podcast shirt, or we might just send you an old unwashed shirt that we don't really care about anymore.
Oh,
but
damn.
We'll make sure to wear it for like a week straight.
T-shirt
first,
roulette.
So.
You should just send them that one that says Hog Wild on it. You still got that one?
Oh, yeah,
that
no,
one
that one's
Hog
gone.
Wild.
I also have the one that's
that one rotted.
It's like a motorcycle.
Yeah, with like a print. It was like printed. It looked like it was a dot matrix printer or whatever you call it. And then I had the one that was a
dot matrix
that
printer.
Was had a picture of a crab. It was from Maryland, and it said, Don't bother me, I'm crabby.
Yeah, that one. That was a good one, too.
So I can't find that either.
Well,
I have a feeling that shirt would
have listed belonged
to reverse
somebody.
Response. You know, it says, don't bother me, I'm crabby.
Right.
But by virtue of wearing that shirt, it would imply that you're not crabby and that you actually are in a good humor and ready to.
Are you currently wearing your Bass Knuckles shirt that you usually wear to the podcast?
Oh yeah, it's kind of dirty right now.
Yeah,
it's getting kind of nasty. Yeah, you're
somebody could win the Bass Knuckles shirt.
Yeah, or my shirt with a record shop from California.
Oh yeah,
I like that shirt. It's like my sleeping shirt. Yeah, or like people would think don't bother me, I'm crabby. Yeah, they think I'm jovial because I'm making a joke. Or they would just come up and be like, why are you crabby? You know, just to harass me. So I would be in a jovial mood, but then they'd put me in a bad mood.
I wish I could find my Darmok and Jalad at Tanagra concert.
Yeah. Oh, that shirt was badass.
I made that shirt.
Yeah. I think you can buy that shirt now, just you can buy it. But there's that
that's
famous,
lame.
That
you
famous
made
image.
It.
Yeah, is that image of, I didn't make the image, of course, but I had the idea for the shirt where it's Picard playing like a heavy metal guitar, like one of those angular crazy 80s guitars.
Yeah.
And it said Darmok and Jalad at Tanagra.
Yeah.
Like 96 or something.
That's his band played there. Like,
yeah.
And then on the back of the shirt, so awesome. I think, I can't remember if I actually did this or not, but I remember wanting to list concert locations.
Yeah, right.
Like, you know, but you know, Kronos, Romulus. Yeah.
Maybe somebody stole your idea and that's why you've been seeing it.
No, I just think it's one of those simple ideas.
Like Jingle Bells, Batman Smells.
Yeah, like that.
Or Gimme Five Up High, Down Low, Too Slow.
The Batmobile lost a wheel.
Weirdly, did you know, I forget the exact date, but the high five wasn't invented until like 1977 or something.
It wasn't invented.
No, I'm not joking. Like, there is no evidence
what about
of a high five. It might be 71.
Were they giving people skin, though? Were you give me some skin?
Like, specifically the high five.
My skin.
It happened during a baseball game. And you can look this up because I'm not going to provide any details because I've forgotten them. I've forgotten the year, but I believe it was the 70s.
It's not a baseball
game. It was definitely a baseball game.
Sure, why not?
And I think a pitcher, like a catcher, was going up to the pitcher or something, and they sort of did this weird, awkward high five. And it's the first evidence ever of a high five.
It sounds like a Dave Chappelle sketch or something, but like...
What about the Nazis? They were doing the Heil Five.
Yeah, but they stole that from the Romans. Everyone was pissed off when the Nazis started doing the Heil Hitler, you know, the straight arm thing, because that was
Roman.
It was not only Roman, but the U.S. Kids in the U.S. used to salute the flag that way.
Oh,
dude, there was an early UFC. It might have even been the first UFC where there's this...
Saluting the flag is dumb, by
where there's this French... This French kickboxer, and he's doing what looks to be a Heil Hitler, is that what you call it? Is that what it's officially called? The salute? The Nazi salute?
I don't know what you call it. There's
guy,
a name.
That guy ruined all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, he did.
Like a swastika.
And so the thing is I was
not
like...
Not that I care, but our Buddhist friends are not fans
of
what they did to the
swastika.
That's
an ancient symbol.
I think that symbol was the design of a dungeon in the original Legend of Zelda because of...
It was also the design in our high school library. They had those little cubicles that were designed to make it so you could sit at a tiny little desk and read, but if you looked at it from
if you looked at the map of the school...
And those white and black bathroom tiles that some people have, you can make a little swastika patterns out of that.
It's the combination of a wheel symbol and a sun symbol.
But the MMA guy was a French kickboxer, and he looked like he was doing a Nazi salute to like each side of the crowd. But I was thinking there must be some other kind of thing he was doing. I don't know about French kickboxing culture.
you're looking at the wrong guy right here.
Yeah, I don't know. So
a bunch of those French were Nazis.
As we discussed earlier, we are thoroughly the three of us in the whatever the Venn diagram is. It's on the
we're out in that box.
We're out in the Star Trekky box and the French.
We're not
the
in
French
them,
kickboxing.
We're not in those circles.
Is but a sliver if it even intersects. But that, now I'm interested. So anyway, so if people
MMA is pretty cool.
If people want to contact us, either to give us money, to comment on things that we have said, to provide input to future discussions,
and I'll output on your face.
To get a
just kidding.
Get either a brand new, really nice, flash, soft, high quality. It's got Star Trek t-shirt, or alternatively...
Can people get a mug?
A dirty old... we could do mugs. We have some mugs.
I have a mug.
Yeah, the mugs are nice. I know, I'm sort of hoarding the mugs.
I thought you were about to say dirty old mug, and I was like, wow, you're really selling that one.
No, your old t-shirts, yeah. So Dan might, you know, I'll put Dan in charge of sending these out, and he'll create an algorithm that will, and an automatic sorting robot so that he will not have any input into whether or not you'll get one of his dirty pieces of laundry.
No
or
input.
A very nice, brand new, fresh t-shirt
so
straight
lonely.
From the t-shirt
I'll
place.
Turn my room into like the beginning of Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
So if somebody were
good morning
to do
I'm
this,
here.
Where would they email us at?
First, I'd like to shout out, I got a new flavor of Bang. It's an energy drink. The flavor's called Radical Skedaddle.
To our international friends, no doubt what Dan is drinking would be illegal in your country.
In most countries.
It's kind of making my chest feel a little
he
weird.
Was gonna, he would have beaten me to the podcast, but he was delayed because there was a new flavor.
Yeah, it wrought all sorts of havoc.
Yeah, in the buy store. Two for $3.79
It messed
deal.
Up the cash register. Yeah.
So in any case.
Jesse.
Prefaced with that, what would the email be?
Jesse.
Oh, don't ask me that.
You say that every week, but then you say it and know it.
Oh, is it? It's something about It's Got Star Trek.
It's feedback.
Oh, it's feedback.
At It's Got Star Trek. Yeah. You know, I take that back. It's the other one. It's the Twitter handle you knew, right?
All right. So, Jesse, what's the Twitter handle?
It's at It's Got Star Trek.
There it is. Yep.
See, you know.
And that also works.
Believe in yourself.
Next time, I'll get it down.
Turkey, believe in yourself.
Give me turkey. Jive Turkey.
Okay, at It's Got Star Trek. And
I wasn't
that,
calling you a
that
turkey.
Works on...
it's okay if you were.
I was referring to Twitter. I was referring to that Mitch Hedberg.
It works on Instagram.
Turkey, just be yourself.
You can search for It's Got Star Trek on Facebook, and it's on YouTube. We got a bunch of stuff up on YouTube.
Got a bunch of stuff.
No actual videos, mind you. Just audio files with static images.
We got 30-some episodes.
37. And a bunch of highlights.
That's
way
too many.
So if you find the whole, like, listening to a whole episode is not up your alley, just put on the highlights playlist and bam, you can just hear a bunch of 1-minute highlights.
Get the gems.
Yeah, just get the vibe. Get the comedy vibe.
Eventually nicely cut gems.
We'll put them all together and it will be its own episode.
Yeah. Eventually you'll all be treated to that.
We can do lots of clip shows now.
Like over the holidays or something.
We'll call it 50 Shades of Gray, or what is
if
it?
If we have any.
Is that what the episode's called?
No, it's just called Shades of Gray.
Oh, yeah. We could call it 50 Shades of Gray.
We could. I think that's taken. We
it
might
would
get
be
a,
more titillating.
Might get a copyright DCMA notice if we called it that. Oh, so anyway, yeah, It's Got Star Trek on social media. Search for It's Got Star Trek, you know, podcasts and feedback, et cetera. Last thing before we shut it down, right?
Speaking of
highlights, during last week's episode, we had a brief conversation about how the emergence of Lower Decks resulted in people starting to ask for and create, by the way, we did the research, Rule 34 pornography.
That's
Rule 34,
for
those who are not aware, because we mentioned
you,
this.
You
in
happened
this,
to find some.
We did it. One of our highlight clips from last week was a portion of this conversation.
You didn't think we'd end the episode without giving you that little nugget.
And a lot of people...
Nugget.
A lot of people thought that was funny. Some people... One person in particular, she said, I didn't know what this was,
right.
So I had to look it up.
She was like, ew.
She was like, ew. But yeah, so rule 34 of the internet is the rule that says if something exists, there is pornography of it, right? And it's almost universally true, and it is certainly true when it comes to Star Trek generally.
And Futurama, too.
And Lower Decks is no exception. But anyway, the reason why I mention it is because we put the highlight clip up on YouTube, along with all our other highlight clips, and I titled it, you know, something about, you know, somebody's looking for Rule 34, Lower Decks, Rule 34 picks. And of course, it is by orders of magnitude the most watched highlight clip of ours ever. And I was like,
somebody was looking for Rule 34.
Because and I don't know why you're looking for it on YouTube, because that's not usually where you find it.
That's not the place.
Good old Google will get you where you need to go.
Hey, do Bing, man. Bing is really good for that.
Bing
kind of
is
stuff.
Good for that. Yeah,
you got to turn the safe search off, though.
Yeah, for pornography. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember interviewing a guy. I did a project where I interviewed Tea Party members, and this one guy, he kept referring to you know, how he likes to keep up with politics and stuff and the news, and how he's like, you know, he's like, oh, I hear something on the news, and then, you know, I just Bing it. And it threw me off because I didn't know what he was talking about at first. I mean, this is like 2013.
It's like, is he talking about something else?
Binging it. I mean, he was making a point.
Binging it.
He was making
He's
a point.
In the pockets
like,
of
sir,
Bill
what
Gates.
What are you doing,
I'm not
sir?
Suggesting that Bing is targeting, you know, right-wing conservative people specifically.
That Bill Gates guy is kind of suspect anyway.
Yeah, it seems like it wouldn't, though.
But it was somewhat odd that this person was going out of his way to make Bing into a verb.
Yeah.
I mean, more power to him. I don't think it's caught on yet.
Like that guy who told you to have a beneficial day.
Yeah, that's fuck like, that guy. Yeah. That guy was definitely not a right-wing person.
No, that's no. Something different.
Yeah, it was a hiking tale. I was hiking in the middle of the woods, and this gentleman passed and said, I hope you have a beneficial day. And it made me enraged. And I was really upset because I was really enjoying hiking out in the woods.
He just spoiled
what
it.
What the hell does that
And he
mean?
Just ruined my day. And I recognize that says more about me, perhaps, than it says about him. I recognize that, but it's just, that's what it was. The facts were, my day was fucking ruined.
Yeah, it's like spilling dry couscous
like,
all over your kitchen.
Somebody, you were contemplating like finding him and murdering him.
We are upper middle class white people.
Dry couscous.
If Dan's mention of spilling couscous.
Well, I mean, I'd say rice, and rice is annoying, but couscous, man, that disappears.
Couscous is a whole different story than rice. That's fair.
That's fair.
It's a different material.
Yeah. Anyway, I think that'll do it for us tonight. So hopefully you all enjoyed it. Hopefully you enjoyed
couscous
the episode.
Couscous is little noodles.
Hopefully you have a big supply of couscous at home.
And a beneficial day.
And I hope you have a beneficial week. And we'll see you next week for episode 3, which I don't know what it's called yet. So follow us on It's Got Star Trek on the various important places, and we'll let you know what the title is, and we'll keep you posted. All right. Have a good one.
All right, let's try something more straightforward. Computer, Command Trainer 4.
Initiating basic training simulation.
Captain, we're directly in the path of a small asteroid. Should we move to avoid?
Do the Janeway protocol.
Are you sure, sir?
Yes.
Collision alert, sir! The kindergarten on deck 8! It's gone! No, now the pre-K is gone! All the ship's children have been ejected into space!
All those kids?
Freeze program!
In thousands of simulations, that's literally never happened before.
Let's try another one on a ship with even more children.